This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. There was a breakthrough today in South Africa which might reduce the violence surrounding next week's election. Zulu leader Mangosuthu Buthelezi, head of the Inkatha Freedom Party, agreed to call off his boycott of the election. Earlier today, we phoned Dumisani Khumalo in Johannesburg. He's coordinating the Election Watch campaign for the Africa Fund, an education and advocacy group based in New York that supports political and economic justice in Africa. Khumalo was born in Zululand. He co-founded the Union of Black Journalists. After the group was banned by the South African government in 1977, he fled to the United States, where he has been living in exile. He first returned to his country after Nelson Mandela's release from prison. I asked him how the end of the boycott might change his work as an election observer.
Well, it changes my work in the sense that instead of only monitoring in the urban areas of Johannesburg, which is known as the Witwatersrand Rand, I am now going to be one of the few observers who are going to go deep into the heart of Zululand and monitor in a place called Blood River. Now, that's important to me because I was born in Blood River almost 48 years ago. And this is in the heart of Zululand, where probably even the news of the agreement today won't filter down until tomorrow or even the day after.
So you're going to be going to Blood River in Zululand because now the people there will be participating in the voting?
Yes, because people there will be participating in the voting. And it's very, very important for those people to have international observers witnessing their process, because these are the people who are the illiterate people in this country. These are the people who are in the rural area where, for the most part, there is no electricity, there is no paved roads, and you know, and the only communication is by radio.
What does it mean to you personally to go back to the place where you were born to monitor the election?
Well, you know, remember, you know, I to me, it's a very emotional time quite often, because I remember being a victim of the South African government and its apartheid policies. Apartheid policies forced me into exile. And, you know, and there are many wounds I can look into. There are many hurtful situations I can look into. For instance, before I went into exile, the last thing that made me leave and go into exile was that the police raided my home and threw my wife against the wall, and she had a miscarriage, and there was nothing I could do about it. So this election represents an end of a very painful era for all Black South Africans, and this is why it's such a significant election. This is not an election about ideology. This is not an election about which party is better on foreign policy or which party is better on jobs or the environment. This is a symbolic election that ends 350 years of white minority rule.
What is Buthelezi getting in return for calling off the boycott?
Well, what he gets in return is every political party here has received money to run the election. So he gets money to run his election, and he gets to become one of the phrase that is used here in South Africa is one of the major players in this election. And, you know, he had lost total credibility throughout the world. You know, there are many conservative people around the world who loved Buthelezi, people like former President Bush, former President Reagan, Oliver North, and all that crowd. They loved and supported Buthelezi, but even they were getting concerned that Buthelezi was holding the democratic process hostage. So, you know, he Buthelezi, in a way, gets some of his credibility back from his conservative supporters, because he finally gives in and allows an election to take place.
Do you think that there will still be opposition to the election in KwaZulu now that Buthelezi has called off the boycott?
No. There may be a little bit, but no, there won't be as much opposition as there would have been, because both the Zulu King and Buthelezi have said now they are part of the process. So, you know, the only opposition will last 2-3 days because, you know, parts of Zululand are not accessible by media. And, you know, so the people there, word might not get out to the rural deep Zululand villages that, you know, it's okay now to vote. But by next week, those people would have received the message. One of the things is that there's a whole network of people who work in the urban areas and live in the hostels. You know, these are the ones responsible for the violence, to a large part responsible to the violence that happens in the urban area. They are all going to be going back home this weekend. I mean, thousands and thousands of Zulus are going to drive back to Zululand because, you know, by an arrangement in this country, you can only vote for your region, or like in the United States, it would be like for your state, if you are in your region, you know, like in your state. So everybody who wants Inkatha to win the region of KwaZulu-Natal, they are all going to leave the urban areas and go down there. And, you know, so word will filter down by this weekend from the thousands and thousands who will go back to prepare for the election that it's okay to vote, and, you know, and that Inkatha will be on the ballot and that they are free to vote for Inkatha then.
What kinds of problems are you expecting to encounter during the election?
The biggest problem is going to be literacy. Remember that there's a potential number, and these numbers are guesses too by the Independent Electoral Commission, but they are telling us that they expect close to 23 million voters. And 23 million voters who about 18 million to 20 million of them cannot, are illiterate, cannot read properly or write properly. They will have to be assisted in the polling station. So what's going to happen is that that's going to slow down the process because it's all done by hand. If you can read, even for me who can read, you look at that ballot, it's a long piece of paper. It's got 20 names and, you know, and symbols that almost look alike and, you know, parties that almost have the same abbreviations. And, you know, so you really have to be able to be careful to find the one you want to vote for. And, you know, so that's really going to be the problem. And I think the frustration from the lines, the frustration from the inability to do this process more is the only thing that can really trigger up some more troubles. And, you know, but the violence is expected to be really minimized now that the agreement has been made.
Have you observed any of the pre-election violence? Has that happened in your presence?
Yes, there has been violence, and you know, but most of the violence, though, happens around hostels. This is where the journalist, where photographer, the news photographer, got killed yesterday, and about 18 people died yesterday. That's the violence that happens around hostels. Now, the reason the hostels, which are these male barracks, the reason they have been a center of violence is that they are the Inkatha party strongholds. And so these men who are in the hostels are trying to prevent people in the townships from preparing for the election or holding political rallies. And when the peacekeeping force came in to try and separate the hostel dwellers from the township dwellers, that's how the violence happened. And the press that went to cover this thing was caught in the crossfire, and one of the well-known news photographers here was tragically killed yesterday, and 18 other people died with him. So, you know, most of the violence happens in specific areas, but for the vast area of South Africa, there is no, life goes on. You know, there is fear, but there is no violence.
The hostels that you're talking about is where black workers live who have moved just to get work.
Yes, who have moved from places like Zululand to come and work in the city. They come here without their families. Their families stay in rural Zululand, and they come up here to come and seek work. And this goes back to the days of the apartheid government, when black people were not allowed to bring their wives or their families here. To give you a personal example, in my family, my father was a migrant worker. And this means, in practical terms, that my sister was born in 39, my brother in 38, another one in 40, another one in 41, another one in 42, because my father came home once a year. And, you know, so these migrant workers come into the city, they leave their families there, and, you know, and they travel once a year or once every 6 months.
Is that going to end when the apartheid government officially ends?
No, it's for a large part, it's not going to end, because there is no housing in Johannesburg. For instance, to use Johannesburg as an example, in Johannesburg there are millions of homeless families who live in shacks, who live in these are structures made out of cardboard or plastic, and you know they live in what are known as squatter camps. There are 8 million South African people who live in squatter camps. One in five of black South Africans live in squatter camps. They have no houses. And the reason they have no houses is that the legacy of apartheid includes the Land Act, which said 87% of South African land is for whites only, and 13% can only be occupied by black people. The problem, though, is that there are only 4 million whites who have access to 87% of the land, and there's 35 million African people who have access to 13% of the land. So it is the government then forced split families by forcing the men to leave their wives and children in the rural areas of Zululand and other places, come and work in the city, and then go back home. So, you know, even if these men in the hostels decided on April 30th after the election that they don't want to live in hostels, they want to bring their wives here, there is nowhere to bring their families. And that's not going to change in the next 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, and, you know, until the government deals with the issue of land.
My guest is Dumisani Khumalo. He's coordinating the South Africa Election Watch campaign for the Africa Fund. We'll be right back after this break. This is Fresh Air. Back with South African election monitor Dumisani Khumalo. You are of Zulu heritage. I'm wondering if there was ever any fighting within your family politically about whether to support Buthelezi or not.
Oh, there is. My relatives in Zululand, for instance, they are very, very strong Buthelezi supporters, because they are nationalistic. They say he's one of ours. The other reason why, which you don't read about in the media, the reason Buthelezi seems to attract so many Zulus is that in 1936 and to 38, the government amended the Land Act and, you know, took away land and took away livestock, you know, like cattle, like sheep, from black people as a way of denying them other means of living so that black people could come to live in the mines. And the only person who saved my father's cattle, for instance, who saved the cattle my father had paid as a bride price for my mother, was Buthelezi's father. And, you know, so the Zulus remember Buthelezi's father for having played a very important role in trying to save them, their livestock, in trying to save a little bit of the land they had from the white government. And that's why some of them follow him like this. It's not because of Buthelezi himself, but it's because his father represented something good. I always remember in Alabama, an African-American old man, and I asked him why he voted for the Republican Party. And he said, "You don't understand, child. Lincoln was the one who helped us get free, And I vote for the Republican Party not because of Barry Goldwater and, you know, or Ed Meese or any of these people. I vote for it because this is the party that brought us freedom. It's exactly the same thinking in Zululand, that they look at Buthelezi and say it's because of what his father did that we are supporting him.
What was his father's name?
Oh, his father was called Mathole. So whenever they refer to him, they say umntwana ka Mathole. You know, this is Mathole's child. You know, so they never say Chief Mangosuthu Buthelezi.
And how come you do not support Buthelezi?
Well, I do not support Buthelezi because Buthelezi has been responsible for many, many people losing their lives. And Buthelezi is not democratic. I mean, I am a Democrat in deep at heart. I mean, small d Democrat. And I've seen Nelson Mandela. I've known him for years, and I've traveled with him on the campaign trail, and I know him. But I also happen to know Chief Buthelezi very, very well. And, you know, and I know his family, I know his mother. The place where I come from is in the same district like him. And, I like Buthelezi just as a person, but he's a horrible politician, unfortunately. And, you know, and I couldn't vote for him. And so, you know, Mandela represents the best of South Africa to me.
What are some of your fears and hopes for South Africa after the election?
Well, my fears are that a lot of people who live in the most godforsaken conditions, people who live in inhuman settlements and shacks and what have you, will become so impatient now that there's a new government that they will think that their life conditions will change overnight. I know, living in the United States, that the conditions of people do not change very easily. And I live in Brooklyn, New York, and I live in Flatbush. And I look at Flatbush after 200 years of American independence, and here it is, we're talking about South Africa, which will only be independent next week. And, you know, so I know that these conditions will take a long time. But my sister, who lives in one of these shacks, my younger sister, keeps on saying to me, I'm going to vote because I know that if I vote for Mandela, I'm going to get a house and get out of this shack that I live in. And I keep on telling her that it's not going to be that easy. And, you know, but not many people understand that it's not going to be that easy. Mandela tells them on the campaign trail that it's going to take time before things change. But, you know, the pain of living under apartheid and the legacy of the apartheid system is so painful and so devastating that my fear is that people might not have the patience. My hope, however, is that, you know, this country is endowed with minerals, is endowed with a beautiful infrastructure. This country is endowed with natural resources that are enough for everybody. And I keep on hoping that all South Africans, irrespective of race, including the Afrikaners themselves, will realize that this is their country, they can do the best of it, and put their hearts and their minds to it and rebuild this country.
One last question. You've been living in exile in the United States. Do you plan to move back to South Africa?
Well, I love the United States, and, you know, and I've come to love living in Brooklyn, and, you know, I'm a United States citizen. I have a son in college over there, and, you know, so I love the United States. I love South Africa, too, and I get torn sometimes, you know, because, you know, I sit here and say, my God, this is home. This is where I should be, and then, of course, I sit back and say, oh, my Lord, what's happening in Brooklyn at my place? I should be home in Brooklyn, so I'm still at a split decision, but, you know, the only thing, though, is that, you know, you don't know this, but my parents died when I was in exile, and I begged this South African government of Mr. de Klerk to allow me just to attend their funerals. They refused me that right, and so I am relieved today that I have the right to, if I have the money, to climb on a plane, come to New York, come to Johannesburg, and, you know, and visit my family if I so desire. And I can, if I have the money, take off and go to the United States. So I have best of both worlds.
Dumisale Kamala was coordinating the Election Watch campaign for the Africa Fund. He spoke to us from Johannesburg. Not everyone shares his optimism that the end of the election boycott will greatly reduce the violence surrounding the election. Jenny Irish is a human rights activist who's now the coordinator of the Network of Independent Monitors, a politically neutral organization which is monitoring election-related violence in South Africa. She's working in Natal Province, which has been under a state of emergency this month because of election-related violence. Are you confident that the end of the boycott will also end the violence around the election?
No, not really. I mean, I think if you look at the levels of political intolerance that exist in the country, and particularly in the Natal region, I think that the end of the boycott of the election could go some way in ending it, but I certainly don't think that it's going to kind of wave some magic solution to that violence. I think that violence is very likely to continue over the next week and then after the elections.
Well, what are the other sources of the violence?
Well, I mean, you have a whole lot of different sources. One aspect would obviously be criminal violence, which in a situation like Natal very often becomes politicized. Other sources of the violence would be just not allowing free political activity in that area, and just complete lack of intolerance, you know, just complete intolerance of anybody with a different political view to yourself. Now, obviously, participating in elections doesn't do away with that kind of violence necessarily, you know, on any side.
Jenny Irish is the coordinator of the Network of Independent Monitors. She spoke with us from Natal. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.